Good morning. It's a little after 10 o'clock on Friday morning, and that means you've reached the Real Estate Fix with Rich Sherman here on KHTS, your hometown station, 98.1 FM and AM 1220. I'm Rich Sherman. I'm your host for the next hour. We're going to talk about all sorts of things real estate. Got a lot to get through today. Before we get into that, if anyone wants to call in, which we encourage, the call-in number is 661-298-KHTS. That number again is 661-298-5487. If you have real estate questions, you got real estate problems, feel free to call in and we'll be more than happy to tackle them live on the air. That should be fun. You can also email me, which lots of people do. I don't even know who likes to call in, but everybody's emailing. So yeah, you can also email me at thefixwithrich@gmail.com. That email address again is thefixwithrich@gmail.com. No spaces, thefixwithrich@gmail.com. We're going to be talking about some listener emails today that we got that were pretty good. So we got a lot of show today. Today we're going to get through some listener questions. I'm going to give you the secret buyer formula. So you can kind of compute your own stuff because we think everybody should own a house. So we're going to give you the secret buyer formula today. We're also going to talk about I've got a segment. I'm very excited about this. I've never had a segment before. So it's going to be a segment. It's going to be good. So we're going to call it Bad Bank of the Week. And it's going to be a weekly recurring thing that is basically a bank that we're dealing with. We're trying to get somebody out of foreclosure. For those of you who don't know, that's kind of my thing. We help people fix real estate problems. I get people out of foreclosure, among other things. We do that all the time. I have a cadre of people around me who are good enough to help and volunteer their time, one of which is going to be on with us today. But we're going to be doing this segment called Bad Bank of the Week. We're going to spotlight one of the banks we're dealing with and kind of talk about what they're doing and kind of how we're combating them, what we're doing to try to get it fixed for a client. We're also going to talk some more about giving away money to help renters become owners. We touched on it a little bit last week, and I guess I left some gaps there because we're getting a lot of emails about that. Because yeah, we give away money. We literally give away money. If you're a renter and you can hear this, you're going to want to talk to me because if you're a renter, we will literally give you money to help you buy a house. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later. We've also got special guests, as I alluded to earlier, special guest, the inimitable Lou Esmond, bankruptcy attorney extraordinaire. So we're going to talk all about bankruptcy today and real estate and all sorts of stuff that goes with that. We've gotten quite a few questions recently, especially at the website, especially a lot of questions about bankruptcy. So we're going to definitely talk about that. So Lou's been nice enough to he'll be on the phone a little bit later. We'll talk about that sort of stuff. And we're going to do a little market update. We're going to talk about the closure of SVB Bank, Silicon Valley Bank. We're going to talk about how it's going to affect interest rates. And we're going to talk a little bit about inventories and kind of what's going on in the market. And I'm going to clue you guys into kind of a little known reason a lot of people are not, at least little thought of people, that inventory is going to remain low for the reason. For the foreseeable future. Anyway, let's get into it. First thing we're going to do is we're going to answer some listener questions. So I've got one non-bankruptcy question today, and that question is, what do I need to buy a house? Enrique R. asked me this. I got an email from him earlier this week, and he said he's a first-time buyer. He's looking to buy his first place, and he's trying to figure out how much he's going to need to buy a house and what his payment's going to be like. And that's a question you kind of have to answer individually because it depends on what you qualify for and what you're looking for, what type of house. I mean, here in the Santa Clara Valley, we have houses. Probably the lowest you're going to find is going to be around $500,000, $550,000. All the way up to multiple millions. So it depends on, you know, kind of where you're at and what your economy calls for. But the best way to answer that question is to go over this little formula. This is the secret buyer formula. You guys love this because it makes it a whole lot easier. See, most of the time what happens in real estate is if you go in and you say, I'm a first-time buyer and I want to buy my first house, your agent will hook you up with a lender, and the lender's going to run the math for you and kind of tell you what you can and can't do. And that's great. There's nothing wrong with that process. We do that process every day. It's fantastic. But here's the thing. It's a lot easier and a lot better for you as a buyer, especially a first-time buyer, if you kind of know how some of this stuff works on your own. So I'm going to go over these two formulas with you that literally worth millions. They're fantastic. We use it all the time. I developed these many, many years ago to make it easier so people could do this stuff in their head. So it goes like this. The total move-in, the only numbers that really mean anything at the end of the day when buying a house are total move-in and total monthly payment. Total move-in is the biggie because that's the amount of money you got to come up with to move into the house. And that's computed by going down payment. And your down payment could be, depends on the program you're in. It could be 0% down. It could be 3.5% down, FHA. It could be 10% down, 20%. It really depends on you and what you're going to do and type of loan you're going to get. But so down payment. The next category is closing costs. And your closing costs are usually about 2% of the purchase price. So if you're buying a $500,000 property, you're probably about $10,000 in closing costs, about 2%. Which is a lot, but that's closing costs. And then the last section is loan fees. So if you take your down payment plus your closing cost plus loan fees should be about 1%. That'll equal your total move-in. So down payment plus closing cost, plus loan fees. So you got to figure whatever your down payment is, plus somewhere around 2 to 3% over that, which you can usually build into a deal. So it depends on the client. As long as you got the down payment, the rest can be worked out, can be put into the deal. Sometimes we can be part of the down payment of the deal. Depends on the loan. But in general, the formula is down payment plus closing costs plus loan fees equals total move-in. The other one I get a lot, which is even more simple, was monthly payment. What's my monthly payment going to be? And with interest rates skyrocketing, this has become more important than ever. Interest rates right now are hovering just below 7%, around 6.5 to 7, depending on what your credit is and who you talk to. But you can figure typically, it's an easier way to do that than going in and running an amortization schedule, is I'll just tell you, it's going to be between $7.50 to $8 per thousand borrowed, plus HOA if any, is going to equal your monthly payment. That's not the interest rate. That's your monthly payment if you're between 6.5% to 7% on your interest rate. So for every $1,000 you borrow, it's going to run you $7.50 to $8 a month. So if you borrow $100,000, it's going to run you $750 to $800 a month, including taxes. If you borrowed $500,000, that's going to be, $200,000. Let's do math is easier. If you borrow $200,000, then you're going to be about, about $1,500 a month. $16 a month, something like that. So that's it. It's $750 to $8 per thousand. So if you have $1 million loan, your payment is going to be, $7,500 bucks a month to $8,000 bucks a month. So $7.5 to $8 per thousand against the current interest rate. So kind of pedantic sort of stuff, but if you're looking to buy a house, that stuff becomes much, 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 much more important. So let's move on to the segment I've been looking for called Bad Bank of the Week. This is my first segment ever, so I'm excited to have a segment. Told us you have a segment, so we have a segment. So Bad Bank of the Week. What we're going to do with this is once a week, we're going to highlight one of the banks that we're dealing with that is not behaving themselves terribly well. It is acting in a way that is, well, just in my view, kind of shameful, and their view, probably profitable. But anyway, so today we're going to highlight RTR, RTR is basically, they're essentially an offshoot of Bank of America. Not officially because they're a separate company, but they seem to service a lot of Bank of America. They're a loan servicer, and they're awful. Like a lot of servicers, they're awful. We have a case right now. This is the kind of stuff I love to talk about. We have a case right now in the office where the loan was originated in April of 2006 for $80,500. It was paid for a number of years, then it went unpaid, and now that amount has swollen to $173,600. So somehow an $80,000 loan that got payments for a good 5-6 years and then sat with nobody doing anything to it has now swelled up to $173,000. But what gets better about this is we approached RTR. And we said, as we often do, we said, look, here's the client, here's their situation, they have equity in their house, they'd like to save their home, how do we get about doing that, what options do they have, what can we possibly do? Because always the first way you start is, what options do we have? And RTR came back to us, and we went back and forth for weeks, and went over a couple of months, actually, couldn't really get anything out of them, and finally what they came back with was a deal that was devoid, this is in writing, they sent us a written deal, but it was devoid of a couple of important things. It was missing the amount that they're owing, which is kind of important, one would think. It's missing the interest rate, also kind of important, and it's missing the term. So other than how much they owed, how much the interest rate is, and the term of the loan, it was a fantastic agreement. As you might imagine, we thought, well, that's probably not going to be terribly enforceable, not a good thing to sign since it's completely open-ended. It's complete nonsense. So we went back to them and we said, hey, can you please define some of these? RTR will not alter the agreement in any way. Well, it's got dates and things in it that are wrong. It's lacking all of the information necessary for a mortgage. I'm not sure how you can possibly expect somebody to sign this. We will not change it in any way because we are RTR and that's how we do our thing. That's a fine opinion to have, but it's not exactly conducive to getting a deal done. So to make a long story short, we argued with them for quite some time. We dealt with upper management up and down the chain, made our argument pretty well. And so what RTR did decide to do is offer the client a no-interest loan. They decided to amortize it essentially over 8 years. So the client will have to pay basically 50% up front, which they should be able to do. Then the remainder, roughly $83,000, they're going to amortize over the next 8 years, but at zero interest. So that means that RTR has agreed to carry a debt of $83,000 for free. And given that the loan was originally like 9.5%, free is better. It also makes the interest rate, the interest rate is zero. It also makes the payment very, very low, which is kind of the point. So we went from a situation where the second that the client didn't really know existed, they thought it had gone away. We'll talk about that a little when Luke comes on with us, about zombie seconds. And we managed to get most of it. We weren't able to knock down the amount owed, unfortunately, which I would like to have done. But at least we got the bank to agree to carry half the debt for the next 8 years at 0%. And that's a payment the client can live with. So we managed to pull this one out of the mud. So we should be okay. The house shouldn't go to foreclosure. They should be able to keep it. We should be all good. So it should work out quite nicely for them. So our bad bank of the week this week is RTR. Remember the acronyms they stand for. RTR, which is the only bank I've ever seen who likes to draft agreements that are devoid of the necessary data to have a mortgage. There are only three things you need to set up a mortgage, and those are the three things, and RTR decided to avoid all of them. So it looks like we're going to enter into an agreement with them. We've drafted our own, obviously, to deal with this, which hopefully they'll sign. They said they would. That we should clean this up for the family. They'll be able to keep their house, and that's the kind of stuff that I do. So if you're in mortgage trouble, I'm the guy you want to call. And by the way, we did this with RTR. We did this completely for free. There was absolutely no cost to the client whatsoever. We've worked on it for months, and we've got it sorted out, and we're very proud of that. And we're a few days away now from getting it finished finally, and that should be the end of that. So we should be good. So that is our bad bank of the week. Our first bad bank of the week is RTR. So hopefully they'll behave themselves better. I'd also like to say thank you to KHTS listeners, because we had one last week we were talking about where it was a reverse mortgage with Carrington Mortgage. And in that particular case, we did the story on it. We talked about it at the top of the show. And Carrington wouldn't do anything, wouldn't give us authorization to even speak to them, wouldn't tell us why this lovely old woman, I shouldn't say old, that's not very nice, 77-year-old client, why her house was in foreclosure, wouldn't even confirm that it was in foreclosure, let alone why. And after last week's show, suddenly, after 3 weeks of knocking on their door and calling them on a daily basis and trying to get authorization and sending it into room and writing over and over and over again, suddenly, as of yesterday, no coincidence, because I said I would talk about them again today, we suddenly got authorization. So I'm ecstatic about that, and they have confirmed the house is indeed in foreclosure, which is not good to hear, but again, we already knew. But more importantly, they told us why. They're claiming it's a reverse mortgage that is in foreclosure because of unpaid back taxes. Now that we've narrowed down the problem, we know why it is they're foreclosing, now we can fix it. Because what we'll do is, we'll prove that the taxes have been paid. It's not that hard. We've already been in touch with the assessor's office, and they have confirmed the taxes have been paid. And we'll go back and say they've been paid. And if there are any assessments or anything that are unpaid, we'll clean those up too. But the point is, this woman is not going to lose her home because of a mistake that the mortgage company made. So we've got it fixed, and if this had been left untreated, she would have lost her house for sure. Her whole family tried to get this fixed and wasn't able to. And we were flying in there, and it took longer than I would have liked, but we got it sorted out now, so we should be okay. Like I said, once we know what the problem is, we can fix it. And I want to thank KHTS and listeners for participating in that, because the number of views on the video is what helped them kind of decide that it would be a good idea to maybe talk to us and take us seriously. So I guess when you go public with these things, it's helpful. So thank you, guys. I appreciate it very, very much. Now, I want to give a little tease here, because we're going to break in just a minute. But when we come back, we're going to have with us bankruptcy attorney Lou Esmond, local legend. He's been around for quite some time. He's been a bankruptcy lawyer for just short of forever. I think Methuselah was in the second grade when he got his when he passed the bar. But he is an expert. He is the guy you want. He's the guy you want to talk to if you're considering a bankruptcy, if you're wondering how bankruptcy works, anything about a bankruptcy. Lou is your guy. I've known him for 25, going on 30 years now, and he's a good friend, and he's been a great counsel to me and to our mutual clients. I send him clients constantly. He's absolutely the guy you want. So when we get back, we'll have some questions with Lou. He'll be nice enough. He'll be on the air with us. He'll be nice enough to answer some bankruptcy questions, share his expertise with us and his many years of experience. And we'll answer some questions, get you guys some answers, as always. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. This is The Real Estate Fix with Rich Sherman. You're listening to your hometown station, KHTS 98.1 FM and AM 1220. And when we're back, we'll be talking to Lou Esmond. Hello, everybody. This is Rich Sherman. It's Friday morning. You're listening to The Real Estate Fix with Rich Sherman. That's me. I like to say my own name twice, I guess. On KHTS 98.1 FM and AM 1220. On the phone with us, we have bankruptcy attorney extraordinaire Lou Esmond. He's going to answer some questions for us, and hopefully we'll learn a little bit more about bankruptcy and how to use that to save yourself from problems, because we're going into very choppy economic waters, and I suspect we're going to be talking more about bankruptcy in general as we go on. So, Lou, you there with us?
I'm here.
There we are. Hi, Lou. How you doing this morning?
I'm well, thank you.
Well, thank you for calling in. I appreciate it. We can certainly use your help. I'm going to start right away, because we got a lot of... Well, actually, before I get into this, how long have you been a bankruptcy attorney?
Well, even before I graduated from law school, I clerked for bankruptcy judges. So, 39 years.
TVs were still black and white at this point. All highways only had one lane. That sort of thing. No, not that.
And right. There was only one stoplight on Lyons Avenue.
Yes, bankruptcy was easier because there was only the one law book. It's been a very long time. I think I've been doing my job forever, and Lou's actually one of the few people I know who's been doing his job longer than I've been doing mine. So he definitely knows what he's talking about. So let's get into some of these. I'll read you the first one. Okay, so Martin C. sent me an email. I'm having trouble making my mortgage payments, and I've been told I should file a bankruptcy so I don't lose my home. Does a bankruptcy prevent me from losing my home? Also, will I lose my car and my motorcycle if I file a bankruptcy to save my house? This is a question we get a lot. I'm sure you get this question a lot. Can he file a bankruptcy? Yeah. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of details here we're leaving out that you need to know to really be able to give him complete advice. But in general, can a bankruptcy be used to save somebody's home?
Well, yes, in general. The filing of a bankruptcy gives rise to what we call an automatic stay, which stops all attempts to collect and enforce judgments or claims against the person who filed for bankruptcy, so that if someone defaults on the payments on their home and they're afraid of losing their home, bankruptcy is an option to stop a foreclosure. However, it's a loaded question, because it really depends upon the facts of each person and how much equity do they have in their home, what's their income. It's just there's so many questions that need to be asked that give rise to other questions and other answers.
Oh, sure. Every solution has to be custom fit, and loaded questions are the only type I like to ask. So you know that. So,
right.
But let's go into this a little bit deeper. If somebody does want to file a bankruptcy and their sole purpose is to file a bankruptcy to save their house, two questions that come to mind immediately, because we get these a lot. The first is, what type of bankruptcy can they file? Because there are obviously different chapters, and I want you to talk about that a little bit. And can a bank object to that? If you file a bankruptcy, you're protected and you're good, or can a mortgage lender object to your filing of a bankruptcy?
Well, there is no objection to the filing of the bankruptcy per se. What the lender could do is, depending upon whether you file, let's say, a Chapter 7 or a Chapter 13, the lender could ask the court in what's called a relief from stay motion to allow them to foreclose, notwithstanding the bankruptcy. We call it lifting the automatic stay. Remember I said there's an automatic stay that stops collection efforts?
Yep.
They ask the court to lift that stay so that they can proceed with the foreclosure. It is a much more complicated scenario for a creditor to actually object to someone's bankruptcy filing.
Well, the reason I wanted to ask that question in particular is because what I see all the time is somebody thinks, my house is in trouble, so I'm going to go file a bankruptcy. And because I'm already in trouble and I have no money, I'm going to find the cheapest bankruptcy attorney I can possibly find. I may even file it myself, because I can't afford to file a bankruptcy. They find the cheapest mill they can find. And what winds up happening is, if the bank does file a motion for relief from stay to pull the house out of the bankruptcy so they can continue the foreclosure, the attorneys involved at a mill don't know how to deal with it. They don't know how to fight these things off. So what I see all the time is you hired a law firm that maybe isn't of the caliber you should have selected, and because of that, your attorney is checked out, and when the bank decided to come after you, they weren't really there to defend you. So you lost.
Right.
There is a big... go ahead.
People may file a Chapter 7.
Sure.
When their house is in foreclosure. That will only give you a short period of time, 60, 90, maybe 120 days, before the automatic stay is lifted, because the Chapter 7 is not intended to allow a homeowner who's in default in their home loan to restructure and pay that default over a period of time. So if it's a Chapter 7 that they file and a relief from stay is filed, unless there's something really egregious about the loan documents, or unless there is a ton of equity in the property and then they shouldn't have filed a Chapter 7 anyway, there would be no basis upon which to oppose the relief from stay. On the other hand, if they file a Chapter 13 and they have a plan on file, they've got the ability to cure the defaulted payments over a period of time, and a relief from stay motion is filed, then there would be grounds to there may be grounds to oppose it.
I think the greater point there is that a good attorney can walk you through this, and you will use the bankruptcy to save your house. An attorney of a lesser caliber may not be able to do that. And I know the rules are the rules and that they should be fairly, you know, set, but that's just not the way it works in my experience. A good attorney, like Lou Esmond, will, even if the bank does come after you, even if they get vicious about it, he'll fight them back and he'll save your house. If it's not, they will throw their hands up in the air and say, I'm terribly sorry, we can't help you, and you'll lose your house. So who you choose, a bankruptcy attorney is not a bankruptcy attorney is not a bankruptcy attorney. Who you choose is incredibly important. I think it's incredibly important when selecting any service, but especially with something as important as your financial future, you don't want to trust that to somebody you found, you know, was the low bidder on the internet. You know, what you want is somebody who knows what they're doing and has a depth of experience, which is sort of the point I was trying to make. What about Martin's situation here? Is he going to lose his car and his motorcycle if he files a bankruptcy?
I mean, obviously,
his situation.
There are exemptions for vehicles, and if they're not using, for example, a homestead exemption, they may be able to use what's called a wild card exemption and save more than one vehicle with their wild card exemption. It's a little bit more complicated.
This is why I love talking to you. The answer there is no, you will not lose your car or your motorcycle, more or less.
You could. You could, and it depends. Rich, to your point, I believe I'm the only certified bankruptcy law specialist in the Santa Clarita Valley, and there's only about 165 in the state. So it really depends. It's all fact driven. I mean, I had a call with someone yesterday, and I had two calls with people yesterday, and both of them, I said, you know, bankruptcy is not for you, and this is how we can, you know, this is what we can do in the alternative. And I laid alternatives, and they were surprised and happy.
Well, as I like to tell clients all the time, there are lots of attorneys who do bankruptcies, but there are very, very few bankruptcy attorneys, and there is a difference between those two things. I'm married to an attorney. You guys who know me know this, and it's very much the same thing in my house. Asking my wife a yes or no question, especially if it's about something legal, bring a snack because you're going to be there for a while, because it's rarely yes or no. It's always a little more complicated, but it depends on the situation, certainly, but in general, tell me if I'm wrong about this. You should be able to keep your vehicles through a bankruptcy that you're using to save your house.
You can at least keep one.
Well, at least one. So he might have to lose the motorcycle. So we'll see.
Correct.
We'll see.
Correct.
Okay, let's move on to the next one because this is a good one, and I know you and I talk about this a lot. From Alonzo P., I filed a bankruptcy 10 years ago, and I was told by my attorney that I don't need to worry about the second mortgage anymore. But I just got a letter in the mail from a different lender that now says I owe them $278,956. Do I have to pay them? I did a bankruptcy. I don't have the money to pay them. I shouldn't have to. I've been afraid to call them. What do I do? This is a zombie second. The very definition of a zombie second.
We came up with that word, a zombie second.
10 years ago. Yeah, so what a zombie second is, for those of you who are listening, is a loan on a property, usually a junior loan. That's why I call them a seconds, although some of these can be thirds and stuff, but a junior loan, so not your primary loan, not your first, that has gone unpaid and sat fallow. You thought it was gone. You may have gotten a letter in the mail saying no further payments are necessary, and it's all over and it's fine. One less thing to worry about, and then 5 years, 10 years, 15 years on, whatever it is, you get a letter in the mail, hi, we're the bank who now owns this debt, and give us all our money in 90 days, we're taking your house. So this comes up a lot. So unfortunately, this is again what I was saying about good bankruptcy attorneys and bad bankruptcy attorneys. This, in my view, if the attorney really told the client, and sometimes people don't listen, but if a bankruptcy attorney 10 years ago told Alonzo here that he didn't need to worry about his second mortgage, and he and I have talked, I guess I should have filled this in, he did a Chapter 7 10 years ago, that attorney was wrong, very, very wrong, because, and I'd really like you to talk about this a little bit, does a Chapter 7 wipe out debt on a property?
No.
Well, there you go. So his debt still exists. And even though it was 10 years ago and all that good stuff, so his second's still there, and now some other bank or financial institution has bought the second, and they'd like to get paid, please, because they paid very little for it, and now they want their $278,279 out of Alonzo. And I happen to know, because I've talked to him, that he has about $400,000 in equity. So that's why they're gunning for that $279 from him. So what does Alonzo do?
Let's talk about this.
Yep.
First of all, during the mortgage meltdown, the Great Recession, call it as you may, you and I were knee deep in this, Rich.
Amen, brother.
And I was up against one industry that wanted to sell homes on short sales and get commissions. Mm-hmm. And then I was confronted with what we called lawyers who were just coming in to do cheap bankruptcy cases.
Collective fee and move
and
on.
So people figured, oh, I'll do a Chapter 7. But that attorney can advise them that a loan that's secured by your house, even though the personal side of it is discharged, the property continues to be collateral to secure that loan. So regardless of whether the fact that you don't need to pay it back, your property does.
So
in those situations, Rich, we were doing Chapter 13 like crazy.
Oh, sure.
And we were valuing properties, and we were stripping off the seconds and getting rid of them. And within 5 years, people were out of their Chapter 13s. They had lots of equity in their homes. They had cured the default on the first. They wiped out the second. And now they're in a great place. But people like Alonzo, he probably paid nothing for the bankruptcy case because he went to a mill. They didn't properly advise him. And now he's sitting there and he owes the second.
Yeah,
and if he came to me, he says, well, can I do a Chapter 13? The law says that second, the zombie second, needs to be paid over the 60 months of a Chapter 13 plan. So if he owes $240,000 over 60 months, Alonzo's talking about $4,000 a month for 60 months.
Yeah.
So that he can finally wipe out that zombie second.
And just to be clear, that's also in addition to his first mortgage, which he still has to pay. You don't get excused from your first mortgage while you're going through a bankruptcy to pay a second like this.
Right. And and look, it depends. I did numbers based upon paying it off entirely.
Sure.
It's arguable that he just has to pay the defaulted payments. So even if it's $120,000, Alonzo is talking about paying $2,000 a month to cure the default on the zombie second, only to be left with the remaining term of the loan to continue paying on it. So, he's talking about paying on his first and probably still paying $4,000 because you can pay $2,000 to the zombie second because that's probably what the payment is on the zombie second, plus $2,000 to the Chapter 13 trustee to cure the zombie second. Alonzo's in a heap of hot water.
Yeah, he's in a fix because he got bad advice 10 years ago, which again keeps coming back to the same point.
Yeah,
good people, you're in good shape. If you don't, you're not.
Remember early on with the zombie seconds, we had a few of them. I went to court on because I wanted to get a reading from the bankruptcy judges to see really how would they treat them, and even the judges were appalled by the fact that these seconds were all of a sudden coming around, but the problem is that there's nothing in the California statute that protects a homeowner against these zombie seconds, and it's bad advice given to them that has led people to be in this position.
Well, that is a law that we seek to change. We'll do a special episode about that because that's a whole hour in and of itself as to what needs to change in the law to protect people from zombie seconds. But
right.
I do want to talk before I let you off because we're gonna get Alonzo into the office. We'll get his problem fixed. But before I let you go, I do want to talk to you about how to discharge because you sort of invented this. I know you won't tell people you invented it because you're not that sort, but I will. How do you get rid of a second mortgage? If you have two mortgages on your house and you're filing a bankruptcy and you've at least gotten good counsel, so you know you need a Chapter 13, what are the circumstances that need to exist? How do you get rid of a junior lien? How do you strip a second? And again, I know you invented this, so I'm fairly sure
I was
talk about
the first one doing back in 19...
When the earth was flat, dinosaurs ruled the
planet. It was the mid-90s. It was the first one I did. Yeah, it was like 1993. It was the first one. People were like, what? What are you doing?
Yeah. Most of my staff was born.
So in essence, you value the property. So let's say you have a home that's worth $500,000, and the first with accrued interest and penalties, blah, 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 is at $550,000. Mm-hmm. And the second, let's say, $200,000. We file a Chapter 13. We file a plan that provides for the curing of default to the first, and we file a motion to value the property at $500,000, and that the second is deemed wholly unsecured, and that upon payment of all the Chapter 13 plan payments and entry of the discharge in the Chapter 13, the second would be deemed void and would be removed from title.
But the key is the value of the property. That is absolutely the key. In other words, if you owe more on your first mortgage than your property is worth, and you can demonstrate that to the court, then you have the opportunity to wipe out, to strip the second. But the key is the value of the property versus what you owe on the first. So it's kind of backwards, because in most parts of your life, the less you owe on your property, the better your circumstances. But when going into this sort of a thing, the more you owe on the property, because your first effectively protects you from your second.
So you can, and that's why, and my loan origination people may not like this, but this is why you never consolidate your first and second.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, because you don't have the same rights with a second, with, or with a second that you do as with
a first.
Well,
once you put that $500,000 first together with that $200,000 second, because you can, say, lower your interest rate on the two, you've just removed a remedy to remove the second in its entirety.
That's right. So not usually a good idea. So, again, that's another very important thing. Before you get into refinancing a house, get the facts. If you're curious, you can ask me. I'll answer your questions. If there are attorney questions, if there are bankruptcy questions, Lou will answer them, I'm sure. Send him an email. He'll answer. I always do. But, yeah, so you can, and again, Lou kind of came up with this, you can strip a second. You can wipe out a junior debt completely. Hundreds of thousands of dollars. You can get it to go away. But the key is what you owe on the first versus the value of the house. The house has to be, to use legally real estate terms, the house has to be over-encumbered. So if the first over-encumbers the property, that is an option you can take. But if it doesn't over-encumber the property, it means every penny of that second is still valid. So,
And by the way, when you're trying to determine whether the property is over-encumbered, if the property taxes have not been paid, that pushes up against the second. The thing is, today, most lenders escrow the payment of property taxes, so it rarely arises. But you really have to take a look at the statements that you get from your lender to see exactly what is owing to them, because they may have a negative escrow amount if they're paying the taxes or other things.
Yeah, fair enough. I want to try to squeeze in one more question if we possibly can. Try to squeeze it in here because this is a good one.
Okay.
Okay, Robert L., my house is in foreclosure and I don't know what to do. I owe about $440,000. Zillow says my house is worth $803,000, so you've got plenty of equity. I own another rental property and the loan is not very much, so I'm assuming he has a rental property that's nearly paid off. I also have some money in retirement, but I can't access any of that money. Can I file a bankruptcy to save my home?
Well, if you file the Chapter 13, it depends upon the loan amount. So if the total of the secured loans exceed a certain statutory amount, he may not qualify for Chapter 13. He may have to go into a Chapter 11. But let's say he qualifies for a Chapter 13. So he goes into a Chapter 13. He cures the default on the first. He still keeps his rental property because he's in a Chapter 13. The rental income for the rental property helps fund his Chapter 13. Not knowing more facts than that, that's a very 36,000-foot perspective on it.
Sure.
But he and I would have a good conversation.
Well, I'll also tell you that the two bankruptcy attorneys he's talked to so far, both of them Mills, I won't use their names because you'll know who they are and you'd laugh, neither of which would I consider a good source of information. One of which only talks to you via email and the internet, which is great. Can't even talk to somebody. They have both told him he can't do it. And
why?
He doesn't know. He does not know. But I have a feeling, once I get him talking to you, if it is something that works for him, and we'll figure out if it does, then he'll be able to do it. And again, this keeps underscoring my same fact. When you hire competent people, you get the best results. When you hire the best people, you get the best results. It just sort of works that easy. I got one other quick question for you that I get a lot. I've been hearing this constantly. How much does it cost to file a bankruptcy?
It depends.
Let's say somebody's doing a Chapter 13 to save their home, and the only thing they're doing is to save their home. What are they typically going to look at spending?
Rich, I can only give you a range because it really depends.
That's good.
I meet with people, I charge $100 for consultation, and I evaluate their situation at that time. And it would be unfair to me or anyone else if I even give you a range. What I'll say is that I've always been fair, and they're going to get every ounce of me that I can, and I'll be fair and within reason. The bankruptcy court gives me certain limits that I can charge on a flat fee basis for bankruptcy and for Chapter 13, not for Chapter 7, and I stay within those. But things go awry. We just had a case with someone out of the San Gabriel Valley that you and I are knowing about.
I knew exactly what you're going to talk about. Go ahead.
Look what happened there, right?
Yeah, audience, what Lou is talking about, I won't use the client's name, but he got involved in what should have been a fairly straightforward Chapter 13 case. Fees were commensurate with that, and it got much hairier, and it's dragged on for years. Thank you for being willing to lose money on that file, Lou. I appreciate it, because the client certainly needed the help.
And she stayed in her house.
Yeah? 3 years?
Another 2 years because of all the work we did.
Three and a half, actually. Yeah, she's been in the house for 3.5 years now. And that was since the foreclosure started 3.5 years ago. I mean, as in the notice of sale was filed 3.5 years ago, so she hasn't made the mortgage payment in almost 5. But
my record is I had a bankruptcy going for the better part of 10 years with a bank whose initials begin with an W and then end with an F and not an expletive either.
Yeah, you can say Wells Fargo.
We were able to keep the client in the house for over 10 years with bankruptcy litigation that was pretty productive. And the client's goal was they had to stay in the house so that their sons can graduate from the school they were in. And once that happened, we let the whole thing go. It was a great victory.
Just to put some numbers to it, and I'll let you go. This one client we're talking about that's been there for many, many, many years that we shared recently. We did a little analysis with a member of your staff, and I did a little analysis a couple of days ago. We figure she should have paid about $30,000 to $40,000 in attorney's fees for the work that you guys did. And I know you didn't even charge her a tenth of that. So. Yeah, so it just works out that way. So, yeah, Lou is the guy. If you're going to file a bankruptcy, Lou is the guy you want. I want to thank you for calling in, Lou, and helping us out today. Very, very informative, as always. Tell the people how to get hold of you.
Rich, let me add one more thing.
Sure.
It's not only if you want to file for bankruptcy, but if you want to just get information.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because information is so valuable.
It's everything.
Just calling me doesn't mean you're filing. So you get a hold of me. My office number is 661-254-5050, lewis@esbinlaw.com, and my website is esbinlaw.com. Reach out. You can reach out through Rich. You can reach out through me.
Through the station.
And we really try to help out as many people as we can.
Yeah, if you got questions, just ask. It doesn't cost any money to get questions answered. Just ask. Lou, I want to thank you for calling in. If you guys have any questions out there, please feel free to call me, call Lou, call the station. Their email addresses, whatever you'd like. But just ask. We'll get you the information. The more you know, the better you're going to do. So, Lou, thank you for calling in. You have a good day, my friend. Thank you.
You too, Rich. Be well.
Bye-bye.
Best
bye-bye.
Everybody.
Bye-bye. Thank you, guys. You've been listening. This is The Real Estate Fix with Rich Sherman on your hometown station, KHTS 98.1 FM and AM 1220. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about free money and a quick market update, and then we'll wrap it up for the day. So thank you guys for listening. Please come back for the last segment of the show, because we're going to talk about free money. I'm Rich, and this is KHTS 98.1 AM 1220 in your hometown at your hometown station. Hello, everybody. You've reached the Real Estate Fix with Rich Sherman on KHTS, your hometown station. And thank you guys for tuning in. I want to thank Lou Esmond for calling in and helping us out with some bankruptcy questions. I also want to say thank you to his hardworking and long-suffering staff, particularly Linda. Linda, if you're out there and you're listening, thank you very much for all you do. Thank you for all the help you give our clients. I wanted a little shout-out to you as well. As long as we're doing that, I also want to say thank you to DW Cookies. DW Cookies has been nice enough to bring in cookies for us every week that I've been on. We're going to keep that tradition going because I like cookies, and I get to have one if I bring in a dozen for everybody else. Otherwise, I just look greedy. So cookies for everybody here at the station. If you want to stop by, we'll give you some as well. So thank you, DW Cookies, the best cookies in town for my money. They're in Candy Country, and they're fantastic. If you haven't checked them out, please do. Anyway, as I promised, I've been promising all show long, we're going to talk about free money. I like free money. I don't know about you, but I think free money is fantastic. So what we're trying to do, what I'm on sort of a crusade to do, among my other many crusades in real estate, is I am convinced that everyone who is renting, especially if you're renting in an area like the Santa Clarita Valley, because it is expensive to rent here. The rental values here are incredibly high. The average is now well over $3,000 a month. That's up about almost 20% just in the last year or so, year and a half. It's ridiculous. So I'm on a mission to get everybody who's renting to become owners, because I think you do better off as an owner. You get to participate in our great big game here called real estate. You get to make some money. It's necessary. And the sooner you get involved, the happier you're going to be. You need to get your piece of the American dream. So I'm on a crusade about this. So if you're a renter, and you are currently renting an apartment, a house, whatever, it doesn't matter what you're renting. If you're renting a room, it's fine. We've got a program where we can give you 10% of the rent you've already paid back to go buy a house. You don't pay the money back. We give it to you for free. It's basically a grant. It's something we run out of my office. We've been doing it for a couple of years. We'd like to expand it because we've got the money we can put into people. We like doing this, and I like giving away money. It's fun. It's a good time because we're able to take people who ordinarily couldn't buy a house, and suddenly they can. And if you think about it, let's do some quick math. If you're paying, say, $3,500 a month in rent, which is not at all an unreasonable rent for a house in Santa Clarita, actually a little bit on the low side these days, $3,500 a month, that means you're paying $42,000 a year in rent. That's $42,000 that's going out, and it's not coming back. You're not getting the equity in the house. You're not paying off a loan. Well, that's not true. You're paying off the landlord's loan, so as a landlord, thank you. But as a renter, that's a very bad idea. Over 2 years, you're at $44,000. That's a lot of money. So what we can do is $84,000. I can do math. So if you're $3,500 a month over a year, that's $42,000. Over 2 years, that's $84,000. I don't know about you, but I don't want to throw away $84,000 over the next 24 months. That seems like a lot of money I could do something with. And if you put that same $84,000 into a house you owned, you're paying interest and everything else, but you'd actually be able to build some equity. And there's certainly loans you can get out there that'll be $3,500 a month that'll enable you to buy something, even if it's your first condo or something like that. So give me a call. Get to me on the website any way you can. All you got to do is say, I'm renting a property. That's all you got to do. We handle the rest of the qualifications inside. There are some limitations, but we can give you 10%. So if you've been in there for 2 years and you've spent $84,000, that's $8,400 we can give you. $8,400. That's got to make it easier to buy a house. If suddenly you had $8,000 in the bank or $8,000 in your kitty to go buy a house, it's going to make it easier. It's not going to do the whole job, but it'll make it a lot easier. So call us. We're literally giving away money. You can reach me. I'll give you my personal cell phone, 661. That's how important this is to me. 661-714-1400. That's my personal cell phone, 661-714-1400. You can also get to me through the station. You can get to me through the fix with Rich at gmail.com. However you get to me, it doesn't matter. Pretty easy to find. That's my cell phone, 661-714-1400. Give me a call. It's all you got to do. Say, I'm a renter. And we will find a way to get you into the program. We'll get you qualified for a loan to buy a house. We'll have Sam, we had on last week, help you out with that part. And we'll contribute. We'll kick in 10% of the rent you've already paid. And again, you don't pay this back. We are giving away money. I cannot say that plainly enough. We are giving away money. Please call. Now, my last minute or two, I want a little personal thing for me. Now, we've talked about that. I know I guys promised you guys a market update. That may just have to wait until next week. I am a very, very lucky guy. I'm probably the luckiest guy that you guys know. And I'm going to tell you why. Because this week, this coming up, Tuesday of next week, is actually my 31st anniversary with my wife. And I wanted to say congratulations, well, to me for staying with her. I'm shocked that she's still with me. I'm thrilled that she is. And honey, I just wanted to say happy 31st anniversary, 31 years. That is astonishing. Thank you, honey. I love you very much. Thank you guys for tuning in. I'm Rich. This has been the Real Estate Fix. And I'll be back again next week. And we'll talk some more about real estate in the Santa Clarita Valley and the surrounding area and how you guys can make the most of it and defend yourselves from foreclosure and get free money. So if you want money, give me a call. And I love you, honey, and happy anniversary. Thank you, guys.